It's good when your interest also is something that is relatively useful.
Yeah.
How about you, Maya?
I really enjoy Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
Oh, really? Wow, jeez.
Very different to the content creator.
Don't mess with you. Hi, welcome to Bite Angle. And you're joining Dr. Bennett, it's you, me. And we've got two special guests today. And they are, would I be correct to say newly graduated students? Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. So please introduce yourselves.
You want to go first?
Yeah. Hi. My name is Maya and I just graduated from UWC Dover.
My name is Kyoran Kim and I've also graduated from UWC together.
Ah, okay. So we've got these, newly graduated students because, they have had, a career interest in medicine and dentistry. So I think, tell us a little bit more about the journey of how, you got to this point, in your student career, really.
Mm-hmm.
Maya?
I think I've had like a passion for dentistry for a while. Mm. And, I have a younger brother and he, like, fell off the bed when he was younger and has had many trips to the dentist.
Okay.
And so I think seeing, like, the progression and change in his teeth from when he was younger to now, like, really inspired me because I noticed the difference between how they were before and now, and that really, like, gave me an interest into dentistry.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how long ago was that? Fateful day.
Oh, he was just a baby.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And so how old were you?
I must have been maybe like 4 or 5,
okay.
But noticing the big difference in his teeth and...
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, mm-hmm. Okay. And his teeth are okay right now?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And how about you, Kiara?
I think my passion for dentistry started quite late, like after I joined UWC, so in like grade 11, I was like... kind of just discovering new things. And I was interested in like medicine, dentistry, and like the science field. And then I knew that medicine would be quite difficult, like the work-life balance. Like I remember talking about it with you. It's like very challenging. And so like dentistry, I really like that patient-doctor like interaction. That aspect really like kind of inspired me. So I thought like dentistry was the most like interesting out of all those like science field. So I just got into that and then I started that society and then invited
yes.
you, all that.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, tell us more about that.
So basically like in UWC, I was like, I should do something like to further pursue my passion. And I decided to start a dentistry society, with like another friend. And then we founded that society and we began to like kind of promote our society. And we thought it'd be very nice to like invite a guest speaker. And then it was, I don't know how I contacted you, but we invited Dr. Xie and then he came for a nice like speech and then he like taught like more than 25 students like about like how to pursue dentistry in the future and like all those like stuff that we were very curious about. And then that like made me like learn a lot more about dentistry than I like already knew and like it made me more interested in that field. Yeah.
Yes. And so we, actually I knew you, Kyodong, because you came to shadow me.
Right.
At
yeah.
my
oh, right.
Clinic,
I forgot
right?
about
yes?
that.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
And so that's how we
yeah,
got
yeah,
in contact
right, right.
because
yeah, yeah.
I think you told me about your interest about starting this dental
society.
Society.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
it was quite an amazing thing for you to do. And yeah, I was very honored to come over and speak. And I've done multiple career fairs at UWC as well.
Right. Yeah.
Have you seen me speak at the career fairs?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's
yeah,
right. Yeah.
There.
So, and I think, I was always very impressed by, how people thought so hard about, their careers.
Mm-hmm.
And so interestingly enough, my delving into dentistry was almost by accident, in
mm-hmm.
some ways, because, I was very, very much committing to doing medicine. And when I was about to do my entrance into medicine, my father, who was actually a teacher,
mm-hmm.
Stopped me and sat me down with my mom and said, I think you should not do medicine. And I was quite shocked because, you know, as an Asian, more than anything else, it's almost like, you know, the pedestal that you put medicine, right, into it. And at that time, especially when I was going through medicine and dentistry, medicine was by far more popular than dentistry.
Yeah.
Actually, we found that to be reversed. So dentistry is much more popular now.
Yeah.
The difference, I think it's also to do with the lifestyle, but I didn't know anything about that. You know, the thing that inspired me to be a doctor was, always there was this very famous in Australia, heart surgeon, he was Dr. Chang. And so, from then I just thought, okay, yes, that's what I want to be. And I think that this was the right move to actually move into dentistry, only because I like using my hands. So basically you do a lot of surgery, and like Kyodan was saying, is that we spend quite a long time with our patients. Although that seems to be quite unusual. So not everybody gets the opportunity to do that. So I've been very grateful about the opportunities I've had. But in a lot of ways, you can make it your own, especially in private practice, and hopefully find, you know, initial success in it. When it comes to the work itself, I think it was something that you can sometimes fall in love with a little bit later on.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the career advices that people always give is that, you know, some will say, follow your passion. Others would say, follow your curiosity. And I think for me, following curiosity is very important, more so than my passion. If I followed my passion, I'll be a Lego maker. Yes, or a bowler. But I'm good in neither of them. Yeah. So sometimes that's actually quite difficult to think of as well. But it can be a treacherous and difficult path forward. So actually I'm curious about how you had to pave your way through the, I'm sure, very competitive way to get into dentistry and medicine. And you can tell me exactly where you're at right now in your journey. Yeah. So Maya, what's happening with you right now?
Mm-hmm. So I think my first choice would be to go to Australia for dentistry for undergraduate.
Yeah.
I think that's a lot more challenging than postgraduate sometimes, because I know some countries you can do like a science degree first and then go into dentistry afterwards, which is a longer route, I assume. Yes. But I know dentistry is very competitive. Mm. I think recently a lot of people are getting more interested in it. And so, there's lots of people who want to do it. And so right now I'm studying to take the UCAT.
Okay.
Which is
Does it stand for something? UCAT?
It does. It's
something
called aptitude universal test.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And yeah, tell us more about that UCAT.
It involves some reading comprehension, maths work, and like things like ethics and things like that.
Situational judgment tests, all those stuff.
Mm-hmm. So is it going to be things like, okay, so two people have fallen into the water and it's a mother and a child. Who would you say first? Is it something like that?
No. It's like very related to the science field. I remember.
Oh, okay.
It's like, what was an example? Like,
it'll be in the field of dentistry or medicine.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So like okay.
A hypothetical situation.
Yeah. It's like one student does not know how to use a certain tool in like maybe a scalp or something. He doesn't know, but then the tool changed and then he didn't learn how to use the new tool yet.
Yes.
Like, how would the student respond to that situation? Would he tell the teacher that I did not learn the tool, or would he go ahead and use the techniques that he know of the past tool and just continue with it? Like those like it's very varying and it's quite hard. Like, it really makes you think deep about, like, the actual situation. Mm-hmm. And, like, most of the time it's like, do what's best for the patient. The answer Mark schemes us. Yeah.
Okay. So given that it's a very specific
I just example solved that question you gave yesterday.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. So you get test questions that are similar, right? And then you can practice them, correct?
Yeah, yeah.
So, okay, this is very interesting because I'll share a very funny story with you because when you're already in the profession, especially in Singapore, they actually do give you an ethics test now. Mm-hmm. And you take it every year. And I was silly enough. This is going to be, I don't know how other people are going to take it, but I was silly enough to read the whole manual for the ethics test. And then I did the ethics test and failed. And because I'm assuming yours is multiple choice.
Yes.
Right. And I'm looking at the choices going, but what if it's in this situation? What if so it's very situational and contextual, right? Mm. And then they often would give you an answer that is not 100% I'm happy with.
Yeah.
So, and you can only, I think out of, I don't know, if there were, 20 or 30 questions, we could only get two wrong and then you would fail the ethics test.
Wow.
Right. But you can take it again as many times as you want. Yeah. And also I did the test at midnight. So you know, those are the things that you probably want to avoid. But, now going back to what you're saying about UCAT, the ethics thing is quite interesting.
Yeah.
So you said there was a comprehension part as well. So mm-hmm. again, when it's like you say, it's reading comprehension. Mm-hmm. Is it scientific texts or it can be anything?
Anything, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think one of the hardest parts is like the time limit. There's like you have to read through it very quickly and make sure you get the answer right.
The text is like very lengthy, and so like there's like skills that you need to acquire. Like skimming is very important in that verbal reasoning section. Like you need to like find the keywords and like do it very quickly but correctly as soon as possible. Like
that's what
makes it very difficult. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yes. I hate that section so much. It's like my worst section. It's so hard for me. Like,
so are they separate exams or is one exam with all the categories to it?
So one exam and then three sections. Then another section that's like kind of separated.
Right.
It's like out of 2,700, there's verbal, quantitative.
Decision making.
Yeah, those three, all out of.
2,700?
Yeah, 2,700. 900, 900, 900. Three sections.
Questions.
No. It's out of like, there's like 40 questions, 30 questions. It depends on like which section.
Oh, okay.
But then the question itself is like sometimes 3 marks. I don't know. Not sure. Yeah, mm-hmm. but it goes like that.
Hmm. Okay. And you're taking this exam when?
In August.
Yeah, we're both taking August.
Is it the same time?
Around the same time.
I think so. I'm taking it in Korea. She's taking it in Singapore.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Yes.
Was there exams like UCAT when you applied to dentistry?
No, there was no UCAT. Actually, this is the very interesting thing. So I got into dentistry when I was 17 years old. So... let me see. That was 1997. So 1997, the dentistry, for University of Adelaide, which university have you applied for or you're planning to go to?
My top choice is Adelaide.
Yeah. Adelaide, yes, mm-hmm. yeah. So Adelaide, at that time was known to be the best dental school. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know that, by the way. I just lived in Adelaide. So the scoring system was as such where it was purely academic.
Okay.
So to get in, you needed to be 99.4th percentile to get in.
Very high.
Yeah, very high. So top 0.6th of the whole state.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in a public school, so I think it was just me and one other schoolmate that got into dentistry from our school.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was only about less than 10 people that were from public schools compared to private schools. But they realized that there was a skew with the people coming in. So we had a lot of math and physics geniuses. Mm. But some of them were not good with their personal skills.
Mm.
And so then the year after, it became, you just had to be top 10th percentile with your academia, and then you had to go through the something like a UCAT.
Yeah.
So, and we were the guinea pigs for the test for the UCAT.
Mm.
And apparently 60% of my class failed the UCAT. Interestingly enough, so what we found out later on was that, in the next year that entered dentistry and they had to do the new system, they really struggled getting through first year dentistry. And I think more than half the class failed the exams. But in our year, we excelled academically, from dentistry. And I think the reason is, anyway, we postulate that it's because we had to have this extreme drive to be in that top 0.6%. Once we got into dentistry, it's like, oh, this is nothing, right? Mm. This is easy. Mm. But it was very, very stressful. Yeah. So I can imagine it's a different kind of stress for you guys as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I know IB is no joke. So that's, yeah. So kudos to you guys. But did you need to, have prerequisite subjects that you had to do to, even apply for dentistry and medicine?
I think it depends on the country because for me, I didn't take chemistry, so I had a struggle with that.
Okay.
So I couldn't apply to the UK,
right?
Which is why Australia became my first choice because I could, it was somewhere I could go without having to take chem.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. But I did do a chemistry like bridging course.
I see.
To try to apply as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Okay. Yes. So, but it's just prerequisites as in you need certain sciences, right? Chemistry was for Adelaide as well, I'm assuming. But you said you could take a bridging course.
Mm-hmm.
So if you didn't do chemistry as a subject, you just mm-hmm. had to make up for it, basically.
Yeah.
Right? How about physics? Was there anything?
I think physics is not mandatory. It was either like mandatory IB bio, and then you could either choose from physics and chemistry. Not quite sure, but it really depends on the uni and country.
Yeah.
But then math was also like optional, I think, like higher level SL.
Mm.
But I think bio was the one that was really mandatory.
Oh, really?
And then you either have to choose from chem or physics.
Yeah. I did take bio, by the way.
Oh, really?
So in Adelaide, we had to look at the scoring possibilities.
Yeah.
So the, physics and chem, and I did two maths, physics, chem, and then English.
Mm-hmm.
So for us, it wasn't the IB, but it was the local. It's called SACE in South Australia. But in that case, then physics was my strongest subject. So physics, chemistry, actually. So I decided to do those instead of biology. But I never did any biology throughout my high school career. Yeah. So, and it wasn't a prerequisite for Adelaide at that time.
Yeah.
So if you did physics and chemistry, it was then knowledge that you would have had to have.
Yeah.
And then biology you pick up. So I think it was my physics teacher. Of course, he was very much into physics. He said to me, "Oh, Bernie, you don't do biology. Drop, you know, don't, because, basically biology is the easiest of the sciences. So you can just pick it up," which is, I think, true. I think they gave a crash course in physics in dentistry, within a very, very short period of time. So like within, a week, we had to be up to speed with the physics.
Yeah.
And then we did a test at the end of the week. interestingly enough, you have to use a lot of physics and a lot of chemistry in dentistry, more so than biology. on the day-to-day
interaction
stuff. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. So Maya's mentioned that she's going to consider Australia. How about you, Kyodam?
I'm also considering Australia, and then I'm also considering Korea as well. So for me, it'd be either Australia or Korea at the moment.
Oh, okay. Yen, and in Australia, what are the undergraduate courses that are there now? So it's University of Adelaide. Are there other ones?
There's Queensland, there's Western Australia, James Cook.
Okay.
And I'm sure there's others as well.
Yes, yes. Yeah. So there's Melbourne, but I don't know whether Melbourne is and Monash as well, right? I think. Okay. Did you either of you consider medicine still or not really?
No.
Okay. And so, I know this is a tricky question, but, what if you don't get into dentistry?
We were talking about that actually, like, if we do fail, not fail.
Yeah, but fail to get in.
Yeah,
right?
Fail to get in. Like, what if we get, like, score for IB that, like, doesn't allow us to apply to Australia? Like, what did we say? Like,
I think we go more, like, science-y.
Yeah, route. And then maybe do dentistry for graduate. That would be the
Like a
solution.
Health sciences, so something like that, right?
Yes.
Okay, yes. Yeah, so, you know, I'm proud of you for not having a plan B. It shows a lot of confidence. Yeah. Same thing here. So when I put down medicine and then I had dentistry and physio, I think, as my third choice. And my parents kept asking me, so what happens if you don't get in? They go, well, I'll get it.
I think for me, like, I do have a plan B.
Yeah.
I think pharmacy, I'm also considering.
Oh, okay.
So
yes.
I'm not very all like dentistry, but I do have like very strong passion for dentistry. But then if that doesn't turn out very well, I'm also considering pharmacy for Australia and Korea.
And actually, I think, well, a lot of, there are a few dentists that I know that have done other jobs before, and they or actually did vocations in other areas, and they are so much better for it.
Mm-hmm.
We had an electrician in our year, so he was a what we called not a senior student. But he was definitely an older student. I think he was about 5 to 10 years older. And he was a paramedic before. He was in the military before. Mm-hmm. And he was an electrician. So when we had to do orthodontic work, which is to bend wires, he was extraordinary. This is what I used to do as an electrician. Right, so he would just bend the wires very easily. And so you get all these different characters that would come in. One was used to work in hedge fund.
Mm-hmm.
And then he joined dentistry because he was burnt out from another career, right? So it was quite interesting to see these people coming in. I've got a classmate who's now a plastic surgeon. Mm-hmm. So he went back and did medicine, and then he did plastics after that. So, and when I was in your position and I did my work experiences, there was one doctor I remember. He was a radiologist when I met him, but he was also a cardiologist and oncologist and some other ologist. And it was so amazing. So I said, why do you do so many different careers? He goes, because it gets boring after a while, and he loves studying. So these guys just are machines. Yeah. So yeah, those are the things. But what are your other interests outside of studying? I guess.
None. We're into gym.
Really? Okay.
Lately.
I should have sounded so surprised.
No, I think it's good for our health. We need to take care of our body. So.
Right. Okay.
Gymming and like maybe other hobbies like music. I think like playing the piano or something.
Oh, okay.
And then I think something for me personally, I like things with like content creation and like those like things related to like making a website and those stuff.
Oh,
like,
okay.
I like those things. I think it's very fun. Like editing videos, like, yeah, I like that area as well. Like creativity aspect.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So did you get to do much of that in school?
For, you know, CAS, it's like the curriculum in IB. It's like creativity activity service. For my creativity, I did making a TikTok account and like sharing like resources for like IGCSE that I did. Like I did that. And then I also like did the website creation, like just like, you know, Wix, like making a website.
Yes.
So I did that. I did those two for because I was interested. I was purely out of interest. Like,
oh wow.
I think it's amazing. Very fun. Yeah.
It's good when your interest also is something that is relatively useful.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about you, Maya?
I really enjoy Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
Oh, really? Wow. Geez.
Very different to the content creator.
Don't mess with you. So how long have you been doing BJJ?
Maybe like 5-6 years now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. What belt are you?
Blue belt only.
Oh, wow. But no, that's hardcore. So,
but me and my dad enjoy to do it together.
Oh, that's fun.
And I think it's definitely a good use of time up away from studying to take, like, which helps during IB and like take your mind off things for sure.
Yes, yes. I know I like to do very difficult things.
Yeah.
Outside dentistry as well. And some people find it weird, right? Because it's like, isn't your work hard enough? But when you're stressed, It's so good to have something that's very difficult to do because then you can just take your focus completely away from something else. Yes. Mm-hmm. Funny story with BJJ. I have the gi for it.
Oh,
by
really?
The way. Never did it once because, so I loved martial arts. So I have a black belt in karate.
Mm-hmm.
Then did Wing Chun as well.
Yeah.
In university, but, in my midlife crisis, I started to pick up, mixed martial arts, because I read a book, about, the starting of UFC.
Yeah.
So I thought, oh, this is pretty interesting. I'm going to start doing it. And, I was a very avid tennis player. So firstly, I wanted to do a bit of boxing because the weight transfer is very, interesting. So, then I started doing that and then working myself towards BJJ because I think it's the hardest one. So we went from boxing to Muay Thai and I was doing these things called mixed martial arts conditioning and I injured myself from the conditioning.
Oh, no.
Yes. And I used to come home with purple shins from the Muay Thai and my wife would go, "What are you doing? At this age, you should just stop." So I was one of the older ones in the class too. So yeah, that's quite interesting. Yeah. So you're going to so I think in Australia especially the course starts at the beginning of next year then, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And Kyo Dam, for you, I think you were saying before that Korea is your first choice, right?
It is,
for
it
dentistry.
Is. Not for dentistry.
Oh, not for dentistry.
Yeah.
Because you just think that you can't get in.
Dentistry for Korea is very, very difficult.
But not impossible. Right?
Not impossible. Still possible.
Yeah,
but
you
very
never
competitive.
Know.
Yeah,
yes.
We never know. But very, very competitive. So, yeah.
Yes. And I have to ask, culturally, what is it like to do dentistry in Korea? I mean, have you spoken to Korean dentists?
Uh-huh.
I'm sure you have, right?
I
Knowing
know
the person
a few.
You are.
Yeah, I've got like introduced to a few.
Yes.
And then I know that, dentistry and medicine in Korea, it's very, very like, how do I say it? Very superior. I don't know if that's the right word.
Very
like
superior.
It's just the most respected in Korea. Very, very respected.
Yes. Yeah.
And so. Yeah, that's what, and so because it's so respected, people wants to get in so badly, and so that's why it's so so competitive.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so what? I guess you guys have also asked the questions about what are their lives like? You know, they're
like my cousin. Yes. He's doing medicine in Korea.
Oh, yes. Okay.
And I think, I don't know, in Korea, culturally, they say like you work the hardest in high school and in uni you chill. That's what they say. But then I feel like, I could see that he doesn't have any like life. Like, that's so sad.
No, but keep going. Maya, can you have a look at
I meant like he's very busy. Very busy. So the work-life balance, it's very difficult.
How old is he?
He's in his third year, second year.
Okay.
But then he took 2 years off because of this Korean...
Yeah, national service, right?
No. It was this like, it's very difficult, but it's like in 2025, it opened up new spaces for medicine. Yes. But then that caused a whole riot, like a whole problem.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, and I was just going to ask you about that.
Yeah, all the uni students took a 2 or a year off of it. And so my cousin also rested. And then I think he's going
back.
Yeah, he had no uni. He didn't
because study. All the teachers just went on strike. The doctors went on strike.
Yeah. Okay. And so I think he's going back next year.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I see. Okay. Was there a question?
Okay, the first one says, is dentistry booming or advancing currently given the current work situation we're in now?
Okay. And I'm assuming this is Singapore. So the answer is nuanced. To say it's booming, probably not. Some would always argue that there is a lack of work. And then others would say, if you ask the public, a lot of them would say, oh, I can't get to see my dentist because they're too busy. And so there's a very skewed service to the public. And this was something that I spoke to about with a couple of other health professionals. And we were just talking about the cost of medicine and dentistry. And yes, we have all these technological advances and even for ourselves. And you have the a changing of the demographic in your population as well. One is that we are in Singapore, and I think in most of the developed world, there's an aging population.
Mm-hmm.
And then also there is the changes of our income. So you get the wealthy and you get the middle class and you have the less wealthy. And actually we see that the wealthy are just getting wealthier and the gap is getting greater. So almost that the middle class is falling into the, I wouldn't say poverty line, but it's at that sense where they can't spend money on things that are considered a fringe frivolous, right? So some people would, and Singapore has a, this is quite general to say, but I feel compared to, let's say, Australia where I lived, there is a different level of priority placed to dentistry.
Mm.
Medicine is a different story, of course. So if you're sick and you're unwell, you go to the doctor. In dentistry, there's this very odd thing. When I was newly graduated and I was working in Singapore, I worked in this very, very busy clinic, and this one guy came in. He was in his mid-30s, and he had broken his top front tooth. So he looked like he was in a bar fight. He wasn't. It just broke it from biting into a bone. And that tooth was pretty much gone. It looked really unsightly, right? He sat down in my chair, and then I said, okay, so this is how much it would cost to fix it. And it wasn't even that expensive. And it was really late at night, so it was something like 10 p.m. In this clinic. And he was the last patient that I saw. So he goes, oh, this is way too expensive. I can't do anything about it. Yeah, so I'll just leave it. It's fine. So I thought, oh, well, poor guy, you know, he can't afford this. And then we walked, well, he left the clinic, and then we closed the clinic. I walked to the back to, I was driving a little commercial van at the time. And so I was going to the car park, and he had this most beautiful BMW he was getting into. Right. And I was thinking, wow, you know, he can spend, you know, $400,000 or $500,000 on a car, but he won't spend a couple of hundred dollars for his tooth. So to say it's booming, I would say not really. But it is very nuanced. It depends on what's actually required. But I think I believe that if you're doing dentistry right now, it really depends who you're serving.
Yeah.
That really matters. Yeah. Are there other questions?
What made you more interested in dentistry over becoming a general doctor? It's quite rare to see that at such a young age.
Oh, okay. So I don't think I was wise enough to actually know that. So that was a very good question. When I decided to change, it wasn't just out of a whim. And I was just very committed to doing, medicine at the time. My father, I was very close to my dad. And so he was quite a wise man as well. He used to say to me that perhaps, you know, we know you more than you know yourself. And he always said to me that life balance is most important. The interesting thing is that I grew up in not a very wealthy household at all. When we moved to Australia from Malaysia, so I was born in Malaysia, we had to, my dad was a teacher and it was making about 500 ringgit a month. And when we went to Australia, it was for our education. In Malaysia, especially if you're Chinese, it would be very difficult to get into universities unless you get a scholarship. So we went to Australia because my dad had a master's in education, but he didn't have a lot of money. So we had to pull all our money together, and he could barely find any work as a teacher as well. And he had to borrow money for us to go to school, things like that. So one thing that he often would say to me is that education is more important than money, firstly. And the opportunity for us to make a living for ourselves is to be as educated as possible so that we have more choice. So all those things being said, I really felt like I should listen to him. And he said, you know, really consider dentistry. Because it might feel like it's less glamorous, but it might be a better choice of a job for you. And at that time, to be honest, I was so focused on medicine and actually cardiothoracic surgery to be exact, that I didn't even consider anything else. So I just stopped and went, okay, I promise you I'll speak to a few doctors, and I've speak to a few dentists about their careers and also what their lives are like and what would they advise me to do being in my situation. And I spoke to a few doctors and a few dentists, and every one of them said do dentistry, including the doctors. Except actually there was this one guy who didn't say do dentistry, and he was a cardiac surgeon. So I went to him and said, please tell me, you know, it's worth it to do it. He says, yes, it is worth doing cardiac surgery. He was in his mid-30s, and he says, let me just tell you about my life. He said, I'm in my mid-30s. I have a wife, and I have a baby that I never see, and I am constantly at work. I love my work, but if you want to do this, it will be your life. Yeah, there will be nothing else. Yeah. So, for sure, if I did medicine, I would have a very different life. Maybe it would have been well suited for me. And one of my best friends is, hi Karim. He was actually the youngest cardiothoracic surgeon in Australia at one point when he graduated. But he's an absolute machine. I mean, his IQ is really up there, and you know, so smart and so driven. He sacrificed his everything to do it. And if you asked him whether he would do it again, he would say in a heartbeat, right? But I think that in that sliding doors period, where if I had to do dentistry or medicine again, I would still choose dentistry. You know, I might perhaps been looking at my best friend. I would be wealthier, definitely being a cardiac surgeon, but definitely I think I'm wealthier in life right now, you know, because of it. And I do have different interests as well. So actually giving the audience a little bit of another story is that in 2006, I almost changed careers. So when I was halfway through dentistry, and the people in Adelaide Dentistry would know this, is that famously for a project, we did a film. So a short film. At that time, it was just video. So very difficult to do any kind of editing. I think you would have been perfect for this kind of stuff, right? And we decided to do a parody movie called Top Gum. And so what we did was that me and two of my friends, we wrote a story, exactly the same storyline as Top Gun. And we just did the parody with dentistry, right? And scene by scene, we basically just copied the whole plot line. But we were just scaling teeth, right? So really dorky stuff, but people loved it so much that they requested for us to make another one. Mm-hmm. So 2 years later, for our graduating present to everybody, we made another film called Key Tech Bond, which is actually a material that we use in dentistry. Mm-hmm. It's a bond. So how it came about was that we were in a lab and go, can you please pass the bond? What bond? Key Tech Bond. And we're like, oh, hang on. That's like, you know, how, you know, James Bond introduces himself. So we created this movie, and there was, at that time, the funniest thing as a storyline I thought of was that it was called You Only Fail Twice. And why I say we only fail twice is that in dentistry, there is this rule that if you fail twice, you're out of dentistry, right? So if you fail a year twice, yeah. So then, and the exam questions, especially for one particular exam, I don't know whether it's the same now, it was always the same. So you had the same questions every year, and in some ways, so the plot line was quite an inside joke, which is that this one master villain. So I played this master villain in the film that I wrote, that stole the exam papers so that he could sell it to the highest bidder, because everybody else in that class were notoriously bad, and they would all fail the second time, and then they would be kicked out of dentistry, right? So they wanted this one exam paper so that they can study for it, right? But going back to the story is that I fell in love with the process of filmmaking. And so throughout my earlier career in dentistry, it funded my filmmaking career. I wouldn't call it a career. Okay. I wasn't particularly good at it, but I loved it. Actually one of my aunts, who's also a teacher, but she did filmmaking in New Zealand. And she came across my university film when she was visiting my parents. And she called me in the middle of the night, go, Benny, you cannot give up your filmmaking because, you know, you know how to tell a story. So please continue with it. So, you know, with what little budget I have, somehow I was able to get into finals of film festivals and that sort of stuff, right? So then I got very interested, and I had a very wonderful mentor, Kenneth, hello. So he was a filmmaker, a film director, I was going through a script with him for my next project. And he looked at my script and he was always very encouraging. And he said, "Oh, Bernie, this is really good. I wish I could do a film like that." I said, "Well, what do you mean? You know?" He goes, "Oh, I just don't have the resources." And I said to him, "I don't have the resources. I'm basically a one man band, right? I put the camera up. I kind of can't get even actors to act in it. So I've got to act in it and I act very badly. So I'd rather film other people." And then he says, no, it's just that when you are a filmmaker as a job, so he has a company to run, right? So he's got a production company. He goes, "You do other people's work, not your own." Mm-hmm. So then he was sharing with me this story that he had. It was so beautiful, such a beautiful story. And he said he's had that script for 10 years and he's never filmed it. And I thought that was terribly sad. And next day I went home and I said to my wife, "I'm not doing filmmaking as a career." Because that's not what I wanted. So you want to do your own passion project. Dentistry pays reasonably well, you know. I think people need to be very realistic as well when it comes to medicine and dentistry. I had this very good professor that once said to us is that, you know you are doing your job right if you are almost trying to run yourself out of business. And I think that's very true. There's so many things that I could say that should be improved in the way we incentivize medicine and dentistry, that it should be more preventative based. But if you incentivize the doing of work, even how good we are as people, there is a certain way to cheat the system. But if you have very good mentors, I think you would just know that what the right path is for you. So it's not always qualification of success sometimes is, I think, wrong. You know, they will sometimes go, "Oh, this doctor is the best because he's made the most money." That's not necessarily true, but I think there should be a certain quantification with the amount of income that you make as well. And of course, everybody needs to make a living. So, and Singapore has become very, very expensive for them. So as far as, the attraction of dentistry as a career, I think that has become less so, in the last few years. And sometimes I've questioned this career as well. You know, you go, because I remember famously my dad said, "When you study hard and you work hard, you're an honest guy, you do everything right, life will be right for you and you will never have to worry about money." That's not true. So I worry more about money now than, ever before. But at the same time, it's not like we're going to be on the street, so it's not that bad. So if you have, definitely if there's an opportunity for you to do something that you really love, with some type of backing. So going back to what I was saying to you is that because there was no, financial safety net to fall on, and my dad still reminds me to this day, "Sorry, Bernie, we don't have a safety net for you. So if you can't make enough of a living for your family, that's it." Because a lot of people here actually have a financial safety net. Yeah. They have inheritances to have. But then, I would advise those people that have that safety net to venture out more and to do more good. Yeah. Basically. So, to answer the question is that it was not my own wisdom to actually move into dentistry. It was someone else's, but I think for me, it was just listening deeper in to the right people, because I think it's very easy to get very attracted to a career thinking that, oh, I'm going to make more money doing this, so let's do this. But I think if you're not very curious or you're not very passionate about this one thing, and when things get hard, it will be miserable for you, right? Because then you're not making money and you're not doing the thing you love. I was just listening to a podcast today. Have you heard of this guy called Simon Sinek? Probably not. Yes. I think when you get to my age, you'll listen to more podcasts, because you're always on the run to doing something. But, he has this podcast called, A Bit of Optimism. And he was talking to the guy who, actually created a comedy show. And it says, Somebody Feed Phil. Have you seen that show? It's a food program. Yeah, yeah. It's very funny. And they were just talking to Phil about his career. And he was always a very contrarian person. So he said, you know, like, when I was growing up, TV was very different to what it is now. There was no Netflix or anything like that. And you had a lot of family comedies. And so it's always family based. And he did this show called, Everybody Loves Raymond. It's a very old show, but it was very popular then. But a lot of TV studios didn't want to do that anymore. When Friends came out, do you know about Friends?
Yeah.
Okay. So when Friends came out, they wanted all the hip comedies, you know, about friends, not so much about family anymore. So then you had Sex and the City, you had that, and then after that, you know, How I Met Your Mother. But all the family comedies wouldn't happen. And so then they went to him and said, you know what, Phil, you need to be sexier. You need to be hipper. And he goes, look at me, I can't be hip, I can't be sexy, right? Then he goes, sorry, I'll just do what I do and I love most. And he pitched for a food show that would be funny, not like an Anthony Bourdain one. And it took 10 years for him to actually have that show released. Because nobody would touch it. They just thought, no, this is a, you know, nobody would watch this. But he said, you know what? And he had this saying in there, which I remember, is that you're going to get canceled anyway. You might as well do what you love. So what he meant is not canceled in the woke sense, but is that when shows get canceled, a lot of times the TV producers would do something that the producers wanted. Or then the writers would just do something that they knew in their gut it wasn't their thing, but you know, I've got to make a living, I've got to make something work, so I'm just going to do this. And then it fails, and then and you've been miserable doing all this and with no upside, right? So he said, you might as well just do what you love. And if you make money from it, great. If you don't, you're happy anyway. So then that's I think a very, very important thing to do, and just follow your gut. Like, yeah. For me recently, I've moved practices, 18 years, and nobody thought I would do it, only because I was very comfortable where I was. And it's a very big risk to actually change practices. And to this day, I don't know whether anything would be successful or not, but it gave me so much more opportunities, because one of the things is that, like what we're doing right now, it's about, what's most important to me is actually public education. And so it's most important for people to know what happens in the background and how things work in dentistry. And maybe it's not for everyone, but it's definitely something that I love to do. And if you wake up in the morning and go, would I do this for free? And if the answer is yes, then just do it. Yeah. You know? And I think it just gives you a lot of opportunity elsewhere as well. Okay. Any other questions that people have had?
I think there were a few more.
Oh, okay, sure.
What's a typical day like for a dentist?
Oh, okay. So I don't know for every dentist, but I'll run you by my day now. including what happens at home. Okay. So on a weekday, I wake up at about 5:30 in the morning, go to the gym. Now, the important thing for people to know is that actually dentistry is a very physical job.
Yeah.
So I used to have a lot of back problems. Not anymore, because I have to work very hard on my back and my posture as well. So muscular tone is very important. So then the next thing is that we would, after that, the family wakes up. Then we do breakfast. Then the kids go to school by about 7, and I get ready and I'll go to work. My work clinically doesn't start, until 9, but I'm pathologically early for my work. So oftentimes I would like to be in by about 8 and try to do a lot of paperwork.
Mm.
I've given myself a lot of paperwork, as you've seen before the podcast, right? Mm-hmm. I was sitting at the computer desk, and what I was doing there was what we call treatment planning.
Mm.
So if a patient comes in and they have an issue, we do scans, we do dental x-rays as well, and then we do a physical chart for their teeth. And they oftentimes would come in with a multitude of problems. And they don't work in isolation. So the dentistry and the traditional way of doing dentistry is that you basically patch up the problems that happen. But we've tried to get ahead of that. So nowadays it's much more popular, and I think a lot of patients are much more aware now of what's available out there. And so we hope that we're then able to catch a lot of diseases early on enough that we can prevent further deterioration, or actually even reverse deterioration. So then we actually have to create a plan. So my plans would be quite detailed, where it's like visit one, how long it's going to be, what it's going to cost you for visit one, two, three, four, five, the period between each visits. And then we'll also send them all the pictures and go, okay, this is what we see and this is what we need to do. And then if you have any questions, come back to us. So that's all done before 9 a.m. And usually that will trickle in. I'm very slow with the computer, by the way. So... And this is the other thing as well. Technology is changing faster than
mm-hmm.
I can sometimes adapt. But it's great. So it keeps you on your toes. So once the clinical starts, we tend to actually go for quite a period of time until about lunchtime. So there's a lot of talking with patients and then doing the physical work itself. I often would see maybe 3 or 4 patients in the morning, and the afternoon sessions a little bit longer, so sometimes more than that. But my patients tend to be with me for at least about a 60-minute appointment, so it can be quite draining. Sometimes so you're so involved that you forget to drink water. So mm-hmm. that's the other thing that's very important. But the concern is, when you drink water, you also need time to go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's something that I speak to other surgeons about. Like I was talking to my very good friend who's a cardiothoracic surgeon. On average, his surgeries take 7 hours.
Mm.
So he said there was one time he did a 7-hour surgery, took a break, did another 7 hours, and then he was going to go home, and then someone needed a heart transplant. So he had to go back to the hospital again. And then I just asked him, like, how do you physically cope? He goes, actually, you just get into this mode where you don't actually even need to go to the bathroom. Because I asked him whether he needed to wear adult diapers or not. sometimes they do, but yeah, he says, no, I never needed to do that. Maybe he's too embarrassed to tell. Yes, yeah. So I end my day clinically at about 6 p.m. Again, it trickles in, and then usually I'm in a brain fog for about 15 minutes, just collapsed. in the corner of a room if I'm not in a fetal position crying, and then just trying to group myself again, and then go back to my notes, finish up my clinical notes as well, and then get back to the family. It usually takes me about half an hour to 40 minutes to get home, and then have a dinner with the family, and then put the kids to bed, and then. Yeah, sometimes actually, there's times when you've had to even need to continue to do work as well. So, there was a time I was so pathologically workaholic that I would, work on the computer until about midnight, and then realize because I was tapping into the server that the server would actually just stop at midnight. And there was one time I forgot it reached midnight and I lost my work, right? Mm. So I was like, oh my God. Yeah. So now I make sure that I try not to do any more work, in the evenings and get it all finished before I leave the office. And that is, usually 4.5 days a week. So I take a weekday off and I do a half day on Saturdays. Try to fit, a social life in, not very successfully, because actually my social life is mainly my family now. So I do have a group of friends. They're mainly doctors only because I think, it's not by choice or elitism. It's just that, they're neighbors of mine and somehow they're all doctors as well. So, interesting, but, I tend to play tennis if I can, and do these things as well. So it's very important to have your out. So I know of, dental colleagues who, I think gyms are very popular nowadays. Some actually do, things like surfing or rock climbing, which is just, like we talked about before, it's difficult things that gets your mind off dentistry. Which is hard to do. It's something that takes a long time to get used to. I used to take work home with me all the time. And my wife will say that I still take work home with me. That's a continual challenge. So I hope that answers your question. Yes. Yeah. Any other questions that they have?
What is your strength and weakness as a dentist? What should we take a note on dentistry?
Oh, okay. Strength and weakness. Ooh. Strength. A lot of people would say it's my talking. It's my strength. It's my treatment planning. That's very strong. And actually, if I could be paid doing treatment plans all day and only that, that's my love. It's basically the architecture of everything else that happens. Then everything else is like, oh, well, you know, I know what's going to happen next, right? And it's the physical work that is also good. The strength and both my strength and my weakness is actually my surgical skills as well. And why I say that is that you have to kind of learn your limits of how much work you can take on. I'm just very well aware now of my skill level and sometimes peaking and troughing as well. So you have to train yourself like an athlete. You also have to eat like an athlete in some ways so that you know what happens when you're actually working on someone. My weakness, time management. So the time management only because I tend to be sometimes the hardest thing is to know when to stop. And I've had to advise other colleagues as well on making sure that we are not too perfectionistic. I still remember this one thing from a professor when I was in university. So we have this self-assessment system in Adelaide. It's great. I hope they still have it. So you see, in the real world, nobody really assesses you. You need to assess yourself and to self-police. So the danger always is that if how critical you are of yourself is a major blind spot, if it's completely different to how someone else might be able to see your work, then it's a problem, both good and bad. So let's take, for example, you have a very perfectionistic person who thinks that their work is never good enough, right? Although it's excellent. And they're doing something in a mouth that would probably take 20 minutes, but it's taken 2 hours. And they still go, oh no, I've got to repeat this because it's not good enough. I'm just going to keep going. Your patient's not going to like you for it, right? So this is what happened in a scenario when I did but the patient was patient. I took 2 hours to do the most perfect filling. I didn't know it was the most perfect filling, but basically I had my tutor come over and then he looked at it and he went, okay, good. Let's discuss it later. So the patient went, we sat down and we have to self-assess. So we have this piece of paper and we have to write down, time management, skill, and communication. So, and then we have to just basically grade ourselves. It's U for unsatisfactory, S for satisfactory, and E for excellent. So then, I wrote, satisfactory for all of them. And he goes, so did you think that this was satisfactory? And I said, yes, I think he was. Then he goes, then he wrote in his one, FE. And I was like, what's FE? He goes, effing excellent. He goes, it was very good. And he goes, but, he said, I would have never been able to achieve that level of perfection with a filling. But how long did it take you? I said, oh yeah, it took me the 2 hours. And he goes, okay. So you need to do 80% of this in 20 minutes. Mm. And that's the excellence that we are all looking for, right? So you don't want to do 5 minutes in a shoddy job. You don't want to do 20 minutes in a shoddy job, but you don't want to do 2 hours and a perfect work, because at the end of the day, one, the patient won't come back again. You know, they're not going to sit there for 2 hours. And that's so true. The second thing is that if you are going to take 2 hours to do this one simple task, is that you won't be able to make a living either. So it's either the patient won't come back and you won't make a living, or the patient will come back, but you won't make a living because you won't make any money, right? So he said that is the balance that you need in dentistry. And so that's a weakness of mine sometimes, because why I have such long days, it's actually completely self-made, right? It could, and sometimes, actually, again, going back to my dad, who's my mentor and advisor in life still, he said to me, Bernie, sometimes maybe the problem with you is that you want everything to be the best. And something's got to give. So, the one thing that sometimes is also very difficult is that in life, nobody gives you a grade. So, you know, and I spoke to a leadership coach about this one time, and he said, yes. So you see, the problem is that our metric for work is that you can go to work and you get satisfaction, either that you made a good living, and so that's kind of showing you that you've done a productive job of something, and you know your patients are happy and you get fulfillment from that as well, and you can grade yourself in a very quantifiable way. But it says, do you get a grading from your kids? Do you get a grading from your wife? Do you get a grading from your friends who don't see you? Or, you know, the multiple things that you've missed of your children, you don't see the fruits of your labor if you spend time with them, nor do you see the problems that you have when they occur later on because you were not there as a father, right? So the trickiest thing now is to balance all those things. And so that continues to be a weakness for me, but I think as long as that is identifiable, then that's good. The other weakness that I have is I think I'm quite weak with technology. So I know the concept of it and just very slow doing things. You know, when I was sitting with my staff out there with the computers, it was extraordinary. They were clicking, like, and mine was tick, 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 tick. So I'm just so slow. At the end of the day, I guess you just have to then limit what you need to have done and just prioritize them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Any other questions?
I don't think so.
No, that's it. One. Okay. So, do you have any questions?
I think that really answered everything for me.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, I think in a nutshell, don't be too worried. Although, I would not have listened to myself now in your shoes because I was a mess in grade 12. Absolute mess. And actually, one of my best friends, I still remember the day I got my results for my grade 12. I was with one of my closest buddies, and he's a tennis player, and he is charming fellow, very good looking. So he was a model actually. And, we were on the different spectrums of academia. So for him, it was that if he passed, he would be very happy. Mm. And for me, if I didn't get 100%, I would be unhappy. Mm. And so when we got our results, I was very unhappy and he was partially happy. He partially failed. And then he was like, oh yeah, it's all right. And I was like, oh my goodness, am I going to get into, you know, what I needed to get into? And I was just like right at the edge of where definitely getting into dentistry and just skimming into medicine. What I would say to you is that don't worry, things will work out. And if you really want it, sometimes actually, if you take a little bit of a detour, that is very good. And so I will end with another story is that my career, I thought, took a detour because I've been in three practices in my career. The first practice, I've been so blessed to have very great employers. So first practice I was at for 7 years, second practice I was at for 18, and then this one as well. I've just recently started this practice, but very happy here. The thing is, when I went into the first practice, I had my job interview at the airport. And it was just, you know, the stars aligned. I wanted to come to Singapore not for a career move. It was to pursue my wife, at that time. So I followed my heart. And so, and this was before I graduated from dentistry. And I just told everybody, oh, I'm going to go to Singapore to work. And it was unheard of because everybody was just trying to find positions at work in Australia. And also you made more money in Australia than you did in Singapore. And people thought it was crazy. My dad was the only one that said, okay, yes, you know, just explore because you can always come back to Australia. It's not a big deal. And we went, I just basically put my feelers out there and just by accident, a friend of a friend got, a visitor, from Singapore and she was a practice manager, of a clinic and they had just been from have to end. Yeah. Okay. So 5 minutes, yeah. So been at the end of this journey to look for two dentists that fell through, and so she was just visiting a friend, just to head back to Singapore and say, "Oh, too bad we couldn't find any dentist." And so my friend heard this and said, oh, I heard my classmate say that he wants to go to Singapore. And so he called me, and I still happened to be at home next to a printer. I hadn't even done my CV at the time. So he said, oh, yes, there's this lady here, and she wants to interview you to work at her clinic, but she's heading to the Adelaide airport in an hour. Can you be there in an hour? So I just printed out my CV, sped to the airport, met her, she took a picture, and then 1 week later she goes, congratulations, you've got a job in Singapore. So I had already accepted a job in somewhere in Mildura in Victoria, and so I had to tell them, oh, sorry, I can't work for you now, I'm going to Singapore. So, and that was that, and fate had it. So I came here, started work, didn't even have a place to live, and really started from zero. I had to borrow money from my employer, actually, just to rent an apartment. And so I was in that practice. And then I came across, the founder of Smile Focus, my second practice. And it was like the practice to be at, right? So, I went to him and said, hey, will you hire me? And he turned me down. Mm. Well, also because I was very ambitious at that time. And I said, oh, I want to do cosmetic dentistry. I want to do reconstructive stuff. And he goes, you just, you know, a few months graduated. And, he says, what I need is someone who will clean the teeth of my patients. Right. And I said, I don't know whether I want to do that. He goes, oh, okay. Then I'll just find someone else who will. So interestingly enough, 7 years after that, I was about to return to Australia, thinking that I have outgrown to a certain level of the practice. So I thought, okay, it's time to go back to Australia. And I was playing tennis with a friend, and he's a dentist at this one particular clinic that I used to want to join. And I said to him, oh, it's such a pity. If only I could work in an Australian-based practice in Singapore, I would want to stay in Singapore. He goes, oh, there was a dentist that just left from Smart Focus. They're particularly looking for a cosmetic dentist, a dentist that would do cosmetic jobs. And by that time, I had honed my skills as a cosmetic dentist already. And I was like, yes, I'm just going to go. And again, I did an interview, and then they said, congratulations, you've got the job. So then I didn't go back to Australia. But yeah, so all these things happen at the right time, at the right place, basically. But at the same time, you just have to kind of follow what you want to do. Because, interestingly enough, I guess if I said yes to cleaning teeth, for my boss at that time, I think I would have had a very different trajectory. I would not have been able to grow as a dentist in another practice. And so that's always my number one, observation before I join a practice, is like, can I grow in this practice? It's not how much money I can make. And maybe I might make a few steps backwards as well. You know, when I joined this practice, one thing that I noticed was that all the other dentists are so good. And when I came in here, I was just going, oh my goodness, this is almost embarrassing, right? I'm the oldest, by the way, in this clinic, but I felt like a noob. So, but it's an exciting feeling. And at my previous practice, you know, once you get into a certain rhythm, you just go, you know, am I learning something else anymore? And the answer is no, I became too safe. And so once that happens, you just have to check yourself and just go, okay, it's time to try something new again. Yeah. All right. Yeah. So thank you. I hope everybody's enjoyed the session and taken something away from it. So yeah, if you guys are ever interested in doing dentistry, I'm happy to speak about it. And, you know, all the best for the future.
Thank you.
Thank you.